Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Please consider supporting Black Women United, YEG, for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United, YEG, for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
My name is Frank Silvestri. I'm from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, not a Canadian. And Philly's really close to New Jersey, by the way. And I'm here to talk to you about why I am a Patreon supporter of Vish Khanna's Creative Control podcast, the unique long-form exploration of music, comedy, art, geography, and so much more. Vish is an incredible interviewer who has a charming, disarming, funny, reverently irreverent style, which feels a lot more like a conversation with friends than a podcast interview. These conversations have included talking to people like Jeff Tweedy, Nels Klein, Ira Kaplan, Dan Romano, Carson McCone, the white hot lung Juliana Riolino, and one of my all-time favorites, the Sadies. So if you're like me and you find these kind of conversations vital, essential, and important, I hope you'll join me in supporting Creative Control on Patreon.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Kurt Vile is a prolific songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, singer, and producer, based near his hometown in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. An original member of the War on Drugs, Vile has been releasing music under his own name since around 2003, initially as a solo artist, but soon backed up by his band, The Violators. He's also a keen collaborator, recording and releasing music with The Sadies, Courtney Barnett, and Dinosaur Jr., among others. Vile's latest release is an album-length EP called Back to Moon Beach, which features excellent new songs, covers of artists like Wilco, Charlie XCX, and kind of sort of Bob Dylan, plus reworked KV classics as well. Back to Moon Beach is available everywhere on November 17th, 2023, via Verve Records. And so Kurt and I had a nice talk about things like Philly, Boston, and Adam and His Package, seeing Bob Dylan live and recording a version of Must Be Santa, pandemic prescience, the gratitude for artists like Dylan, Dead Milkmen, George Jones, Tom Petty, and David Berman that's present throughout this new EP, our personal connections to Berman, Silver Jews, and Purple Mountains, his interactions with Neil Young, including one's children in their work life, our shared love of the late Dallas Good and the Sadies, and his work with them, collaborating with Kate LeBon on this new release, tour dates, other future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners just like you who follow and subscribe to this donor-driven podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol. That is the primary source of revenue that I get for all the work that I put into making this podcast. It's a modest amount. I just got a new $4 member as I'm doing this intro. Thank you, Kyle. Someone named Kyle just became a member just now. Isn't that something? I should turn my internet off. Anyway, it would mean a lot to me if you can find it in your hearts and your wallets or checkbooks or whatever it is you use to make a flexible monthly donation to support my work on Patreon. Thank you very much. With additional support from Blackbird Music, a wonderful record store with bricks and mortar locations in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta, and a helpful website, blackbird.ca, where you can actually order records you want shipped to your house. Say you want the new Kurt Vile EP, Back to Moon Beach. Go to blackbird.ca, type in what you're looking for, and if they can get it for you, they'll get it for you. It's just that simple. Thanks again to Blackbird. Again, learn more about them at blackbird.ca. Plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 821 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Kurt Vile, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hey, Kurt, how's it going?
Good, thanks. How you doing?
I'm okay. I have to admit I'm a little tired. Our 8-year-old daughter, Ramona, had a nightmare. Oh. And ended up in our bed and kind of woke us up. And then when I asked her what the nightmare was about, she said, zombies. I said, oh, what were they doing? And she said, I don't want to talk about it. So I'm both tired and I feel like I'm being, information is being withheld from me, interesting information. So I apologize if I'm a little out of it. Have you had an experience like this?
Well, let me ask you this. Was she like, don't worry about it, Dad? Or was she like, don't worry about it, anybody?
That's a good point. She didn't tell either of us, my wife and I. She wouldn't divulge. Yeah. What's the distinction there? Should I be?
No, I just meant like, then it's more like she'll tell you eventually. But I thought it was more like, don't worry about it. I'm going to tell Mom.
So have you had that with your kids where they'll tell one of you one thing, but
in my life, probably, but I feel like not lately, you know?
Okay. Good. Good. So where in the world are you today there, Kurt?
I'm in Philadelphia.
Oh, nice. This is your home base. Beloved city. Fair to say.
Beloved to me for sure.
Yeah.
But, I feel bad for people who come through playing shows who aren't from here or trying to be like, I can't wrap my head around Philly. It's like, I can't. You got to kind of be in it to know all the pockets.
Oh.
But, or come back a lot, I feel like.
Oh, like infrastructurally, it's confusing?
Well, I feel like most places that anyone's going to be to see a show, for instance, it's not the best perspective of what the city's like. It's hard to tell, you know?
Yeah.
But there's all kinds of, if you're moving around the city a lot, I also got out to Mount Airy or, you know, Germantown. Those areas are just like so many trees and woods that you forget you're in the city, you know, but then again, if you need to get into the city, you're just, you know, 20 minutes away or something.
Yeah. You got a video for, this, wonderful song, Another Good Year for the Roses, that I want to talk to you about in a minute. But, the video is very woodsy. Was that shot in Philadelphia?
Yeah, no, that's shot in basically my neighborhood. Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's wonderful. You have hiking and stuff?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. That's cool. I have kind of a magical memory of Philadelphia because, 23 years ago, I was road managing a band from Canada and we were heading into Philadelphia for a show. And I said, you know who I know from Philadelphia that played my house a couple of years ago is this Adam and His Package. And my friends were like, who? I'm like, Adam and His Package. He's very funny. He had a song called, Sting cannot possibly be the same guy who was in The Police, which I always thought.
Wow, that's so good. I didn't know. I think about that often because The Police The police walking on the moon.
Yeah.
Walking on the moon is like the best song of all time.
Yeah. I wondered if a song like that might be an influence on the title track for this EP. Anyway, I just want to finish this. We got into town and then we went wandering around Philadelphia. I go to a record store. Who do I run into? Adam from Adam and His Package. Are you familiar with Adam and His Package?
My wife, Suzanne, she went to Dartmouth and they were all obsessed with him there and had him play maybe multiple times. I would always hear his name but it was like when he was playing shows, house shows and stuff, it was before I was hip enough or old enough maybe to go out and see it myself, but I would hear about it a lot and people, but I should get into it now. I know he's like a hero of the DIY Philly, you know?
Yeah, yeah. He's probably ahead of your time. You're younger than me, but I don't know if he's still active. Anyway, that's my magical Philly moment. I've been there a few times. I think it's a wonderful city, and I can see why you don't want to leave. You've never pondered living elsewhere, I'm guessing.
Well, I lived in Boston for 2 years just for like life reasons of like getting your life moving. Like my wife, she wasn't my wife then, but she got her master's at Emerson, and I worked at a warehouse, you know. I always knew all I ever want to be is a professional, you know, musician, recording my own music.
Yeah.
It wasn't the easiest getting where I am, but another way, it totally was, because all I did was keep playing music and recording it myself or getting friends to record it and then hustling my way into the studio, but
yeah,
whatever. But conveniently, I travel for a living. Yeah. If I didn't, that might be a different story, but Philly's close enough to New York that in my formative years of hustling, I could get up there easily and then later, you know, go out and record in LA or whatever, and then go on tour and see where you like to be and meet some friends there and work there when you can. But yeah, I never had to actually move, you know. Now I'm glad I didn't, because I'm in the woods.
Did your wife? This is another magical Philadelphia moment for me. You mentioned Emerson College. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Just yesterday, I was invited, a couple of weeks ago, I was invited to take part in someone's lecture remotely, a teacher at Emerson College. And he wanted to talk about talking about music and song lyrics in the form of like argumentation or something. I'm not doing a great job of explaining what I was. That's just weird though. Like, we talked about David Berman and Bob Dylan and a bunch of stuff, and it was really fun. And, that's just weird that you brought up Emerson, because I didn't. That's really wild. Did your now wife enjoy her time at that school?
Yeah, she did. Well, and a lot of people, I forget too, a lot of people went there that have, you know, influenced and been in my life. Like, and my bandmate Rob Laxo, he went there too. He's from a band called the Wicked Farleys, and then he was in the Swirlies, legendary Boston area band, shoegaze, but. And did other friends as well, but Rob ended up being in my band, you know. But yeah, it's a cool school. Like, a lot of, you know, people went to school for recording and, you know, creative writing and music. There's a cool music sort of recording branch, I should say. I don't know. I don't know. I'm a blue collar man. You know?
You weren't attending any schooling in Boston, is what you're saying. Your wife was.
No.
Yeah. Okay. All right. No, that's cool. And, very briefly, I just want to extend my condolences to you there. You mentioned Rob, and it's bittersweet to talk about this EP. Let's get into it. Back to Moon Beach. It's an EP,
yep,
but it's not an EP length. This is already the talk of the town. Everyone's talking about this, Kurt. Everywhere I go, people are like, you hear this, Kurt Vile? He put out an EP, but it's long. And I say, yeah, if I ever see Kurt, I'll ask him, Kurt, what happened here? Why is your EP actually an LP length?
That's classic KV there. No, it's because the first six songs, you could say the first six songs are the EP, and that's what fits on an LP.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last three songs have been previously released, and they fall into the compilation, you know? But it's because when I was making this record, I knew I had those Stinson Beats recordings, two of which are longer. And somehow they're both exactly 8 minutes and 15 seconds long. I don't know what that means yet, but it means something. You know, that kind of stuff is for a reason. I just didn't sit around and look at the numbers yet. But that alone will fill up the album. So with me, like, you know, I can have some long songs. But that's why. That's why. Because okay. There's a couple long songs. When I was making, I was like, I know I got these songs. And it's the Christmas song in particular, like, I just had this video I was sitting on. I released that Christmas song last year, mm-hmm. and it's got my kids singing on it, and we made a cool, funny video. My brother Sam, makes really funny videos. He was involved in my Mount Airy Hill video.
Mm-hmm.
But, so anyway, I wanted, with the Christmas timing, you know, it's November, I wanted that to be on it.
Yeah.
But I didn't know going in, I knew songs had potential, but I had to go deep into some of the songs and overdub like crazy till they were usable. And then other ones are my favorite songs that were ready for the last record that just didn't make it onto the last record. Not because they weren't as good, but just because there's only so many songs that could fit. And also Touch Something Called a Virus. That song was finished. It's the track two of this EP, and it was contender for the last record, but I thought people would think it's about the pandemic, which it wasn't, because it was recorded beforehand, you know, so maybe it was psychic, but that's about it.
No, it's creepy is what it is. I read about this time.
I know, but
it's eerie that you did that.
I do feel like, honestly, I can feel things on the horizon. I don't know it at the time, but I feel like some psychic things happen where I don't know it, but I have a weird, it's just, you could kind of see the future without knowing it.
Do you?
But no, yeah. It's more like I wrote Touch Something Called a Virus, that line. I wrote it years ago. But yeah. Like by the time I record that song, it was just a few months before. You know, that was the only session I had really before the pandemic hit, you know, September 2019.
Yeah. So this song, Touch Something Called a Virus, there's a few things you said there. I don't want to leave Must Be Santa alone. Because I just saw Bob Dylan 3 times, and he didn't play that song once. And it's a festive. I want to ask you about that in a second. I'm just kidding. I didn't expect him to play it. A beautiful shows that I got to see. No,
are they good?
Oh my God! Do you want to talk about it?
I'm about to see him too.
Where are you going to see him? In Philadelphia?
Philly.
Nice. That's
on
great.
November 19th.
So, Kurt, I'm from Ontario originally, but I moved to Alberta in 2020. January 2020. My wife's from here, and then we found work and blah, blah, blah. So, anyway, I knew that in the back of my mind, if Dylan played Ontario, that might be enough to get me to go back. And of course, it didn't happen until now. So I went with the plan to see him both nights at Massey Hall. And then, at the last minute, we bought tickets for Rochester, New York, and 8th row center the day before.
Woo!
Unbelievable.
Wow.
And anyway, unbelievable shows. Set lists are pretty much the same, which is, I've seen him like 30 odd times, 35, something like that. So I've seen him. I like him a lot. He's good. But yeah, sets are pretty much the same. Have you seen him before?
Yeah. I've seen him. I saw him like peak pandemic this past, it was the best I ever saw him.
Yeah.
It was, well, 2021 maybe.
Oh, cool.
I wonder if it's the same set list-ish as then.
I think it's similar, but he's moving some things around, and I wrote a couple of things about it. I wrote a review for a magazine in Canada, and then are you familiar with this guy, Ray Padgett? He has a book out. It's over here. I can't reach it right now. It's really good. It's called Pledging My Time. I had him on my show a little while ago, and it's about he has conversations with people who played with Dylan in some capacity throughout his entire trajectory. It's amazing.
Oh, wow. So that's my language.
Yeah. No.
That's in my language.
I will send you a link or something because you got. It's called. I'm telling you now. You try to retain this. Pledging My Time, Ray Padgett. Anyway, he had me do something for his newsletter. He liked. He knew I was going to both Massey Hall shows. Kurt, the set list. I think because we were trying to figure out why he picked the songs he picked for this show. Like it's a lot of Rough and Rowdy Ways stuff, but the rest of the songs are like he's doing really interesting kind of songs of his own and some covers. They all seem to be about saying goodbye. They all seem to be really? About him retiring and winding down. He's been starting the shows off with Watching the River Flow, and the first line is, "What's the matter with me? I ain't got much to say." I think, and then if you follow it that way, if you if you look at the set list, you're like, "Holy shit! They're all about winding down and leaving the road." I think cool. That was my theory. Sorry,
that's awesome.
Yeah,
Yeah. I'm going to stop you there.
I don't want to ruin the show. I'm sorry.
No, that's a great. No, you set it up, though.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Anyway, where was I going with this? Touch Something caught a virus. You wrote it before the pandemic. We've established that. I picked up on some Dead Milkman stuff in this.
Yes.
There's a few different things. I'm just going to read the lyrics out to people so they get it. Stole three words from Rodney, a man who come before me from Philly like me, so it's okay, and I'm a-thinking about him today. Later, at the towards the end of the song, young teen on a skateboard blasting Eat Your Paisley, well, that was me. So, for those who don't know, Rodney is, I think, Kurt, you tell me if I'm wrong, Rodney,
yeah,
anonymous, has anyone else pointed this out?
No, not yet.
Oh my God,
Rodney,
come on.
Legend, Philly legend. Yeah, Eat Your Paisley. I love all Dead Milkmen. You know, it's growing up in Philly pride, but Eat Your Paisley, they've got 2 feet off the ground on there, you know, shake your head and hear the sound, take a, you know, light up a smoke, do 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 do, cause life is no joke. Shake your head and hear the sound, take another look around, nothing's lost that isn't found, you're just 2 feet off the ground. Except he's screaming it at the top of his lungs.
Yeah.
And Joe, the guitarist, other songwriter with a kind of more great sort of Muppet-like voice in a way. It's not solely Muppet, but like, and he's got that Philly accent.
Yeah.
Unapologetical Philly accent, you know. He's like singing harmony in the background of those same words that makes it so beautiful, and it's such a release the way they scream. But yeah, the other song, Earwig, you got an earwig. Crawling towards your brain, you got an earwig, the glorious pain. And like, that's me writing really fast. That's, I guess, how I would imagine some of more Dylan writes in these newer songs, or in general, but like, touch something called a virus. And I think it's killing me. You might claim I'm no doctor, and don't I know? Cup runneth over with life blood, and then it sprung a leak. It took about a week, and man, I got a migraine, the glorious pain.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I wrote that pretty quick, you know, the glorious pain. And then in that moment, I said, I stole three words from Rodney, a man who come before me from Philly like me. Because, you know, so the glorious pain, I'm just referencing Earwig. You know, it's not even when I'm writing it, I just hear it because I've heard that song over and over. But there's so many songs. And I know for a fact that's the way Dylan writes, you know.
Yeah.
You see things all the time, or, you know, one of the ways. You see that all the time. He's name checking everybody, especially in these later records, but he's doing it before too. And that's, you just sort of realize that's what writers do all the time. The great writers, they're homage and allude all the time, you know, because there is nothing new under the sun, to quote Nick Tosh's, who's quoting somebody, some Greek, whoever, I don't know. But like, it's like, that's the beauty, you know?
This EP seems to include a lot of homage from your end of things. I'm talking about to George Jones's famous song, A Good Year for the Roses, obviously is alluded to in another Good Year for the Roses. We've just talked about Dead Milkmen, Tom Petty, Bob Dylan, David Berman, your own daughters. You are feeling grateful to your muses. Is that a way of putting it?
Man, I guess so. And I'm glad you're noticing, you know, because I do it a lot, and I will say, in a lot, yeah, like, definitely influenced by later Dylan and how he was doing that too, and just to see him doing this in real time, and you're obviously paying attention to that too,
yeah.
So I like hearing you say it back to me, because I did like all of a sudden look at the sequence and see all that in it, and then things like, yeah, you're name checking Bob Dylan, you know, your hero. If you ever saw him, you'd melt down like a nuclear reactor, you know. And there's times we're living in where, you know, there's plenty of psychological and real threats, you know.
Yeah.
But then the next song comes up and it's Dylan's Must Be Santa, you know. All kinds of little, they work themselves out, but it's like crazy how it's kind of a story, you know, I guess, without knowing.
Yeah, that's one thing to pay homage to people or quote their lyrics. You actually do some cover songs. A wonderful song by Wilco, Passenger Side. I think on a different edition, which I don't have at the moment, you do a Charlie XCX song. Is that right?
Well, yeah, that's just that's on the solo. Well, those were just that's on the there's a limited.
Yeah, some sort of deluxe edition
LP.
Thing. Yeah.
Oh, so you don't have the passenger side?
No. I have passenger side by Wilco.
Okay,
and it's beautiful.
Okay, yeah, no, that
I was
that
I was playing it in the car like for my son yesterday.
Okay,
and he was listening, and he likes Wilco actually quite a bit, but he hadn't connected the song to them, and then he was listening. He's like, "Hey, they're drinking beer in the car? That's not right."
Yeah.
You know, my son is 12. He's 12. He didn't think that was right. And I was like, no, it's just a story. It's a fun song, I guess, in a way about delinquency. But anyway, yeah. So sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you there. It seems to me you've got that on your brain. I'm going to pay some tribute to people I love and allude to their songs. If not outright play some of them. So something about you feeling, I think, reflective and grateful for the artist you love. That's all I was getting at.
Wow, that's cool, man. Thank you. I said, it's not like I'm not organized that way where I'm like, I'm going to make an album about this. And I also am a believer, at least for myself, once you say you're going to make an album about this, it's already contrived, you know? Like, so it just happened that way, I guess. You know, it's like, once you say you're going to make an album about something, it's already like a shtick, you know?
Yeah. We
compromise.
We kind of fell into a discussion about the Police and Walking on the Moon. And it's funny that that came up because now that I think about the title track Back to Moon Beach, I feel it has a similar kind of feel. Is that an influence?
No. But I mean, I love that song so much. I go back to it a lot.
Yeah.
Back to Moon Beach, it's firstly a reference to. I have a song called Beach on the Moon that came out on my album, God is Saying This to You. I don't say that in the song, but it just sounds like a beach on the moon. And then that riff, around the time, definitely that David Berman passed, you know, that riff I was playing with on my electric guitar at home at this vintage Fender Mustang with a really good whammy bender tremolo thing. So it's all about the bend. And then it's like, beach on the moon, beach on the moon. These recycled riffs ain't going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah.
The full title of that old song is Beach on the Moon, Recycled Lyrics. So this is like, yeah, Back to Moon Beach, like going back like that, you know, I guess that's, there's a movie I probably never even saw called Back to the Beach. This is Back to Moon Beach, and it's, we record these songs at Stinson Beach, and there's a cadence delivery of the lyrics that it's, definitely another listening to my teens to Silver Jews, Starlight Walker. There's a song on there that has a very similar delivery. That so all those things combined, that's what that's like. And also one time I told Neil Young, you know, we played Down by the River. It was like he was underground and in outer space at the same time, and he didn't miss a beat. He's like, oh yeah, we could go to outer space whenever we want. So I like that, like, you know, beach on the moon. That's like my, where I want to live. That's where I live. That's where I give. That's stuff I say in the song where you get lost in a chord. You go to the studio, you're on the moon with your friends. Like you can tap in and out with music and go on the moon whenever you need to or whenever it calls you, you know, you might not even know, but you pick up a guitar and you're there.
I mean, the fact that you can have a conversation with Neil Young must be an out-of-body experience. I know you've sang about opening for Neil, who I love and have seen many, many times as well. What is that like to actually encounter someone like that?
Okay, well, first of all, that was the extent of the conversation. and that was with my wife, Suzanne, pushing me because I was like to talk to him, you know. He's right there and I was shy, afraid, you know. But it was amazing to, you know, that's the best story. I've rhymed with that story a lot, you know. I've got to tell that story. But yes, it is amazing, though, that I could weasel my way backstage or know people in his entourage to be able to get there. You know, that was a important. That was the first time I saw him with Promise of the Real, Willie Nelson's Kids, etc.
Yeah.
And they backed him up so good, and they did play. They played Down by the River. It was in Nashville, and he was just playing with your mind because they did extensive jams of, like, you know, before the last verse. That just the jam kept going and going. It could have been 20 minutes long. And then he coming back as if he was going to sing the last verse. be on my side, I'll be on your side. But instead, he'd just be like, be on my side, and then go and go back into the jam again, just playing with people's minds.
Yeah.
You know, he went because he kept going to outer space whenever he felt like it.
Did you actually open for him? Was that a little bit of artistic license?
I opened for him. Yeah, then I did.
Okay.
I opened for him when I wrote that song, mm-hmm. and that was in Old City, Quebec, in this giant for a festival. And it was Promise of the Real. Then Kurt Vile and the Violators. Then Neil Young with Promise of the Real backing him up, and that was in front of 80,000 people.
Oh yeah,
that was mind blowing.
On the plains, you know? Plains of Abraham. Kind of thing, that place, that's where it was, I think.
I mean, I don't remember that name, but it looked like that.
Yeah. I've been to that festival.
Like,
I went to that festival once, yeah. It's like a big kind of corporate festival kind of thing, right?
Ooh, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know,
yeah.
But it was massive, though. And maybe it looked free. No, maybe it wasn't even free. But it was a really beautiful place. And that was in 2018, I think. I think that was the 5th of July or something.
Yeah.
Or the 6th of July in 2018.
So you have this song called Tom Petty's Gone, But Tell Him I Asked For Him. And it talks about this. I think it talks about this. You tell me about the desires at times to encounter your heroes and just chat with them, get their insights. And then the missed opportunities that we have when people pass away. And so the Tom Petty stuff would be obvious. Bob Dylan's referenced here, and you're like, you quoted earlier, like, if I got to talk to him, I'd probably just melt down, you'd freak out. But one of the things that stuck out as well in this song, we've alluded to, each of us have alluded to him a few times, is DCB, David Cloud Berman. And the lyric is, to them that chose to leave like DCB, well, really wish he could have held on a little longer. If you see him on another dimension, will you tell him we all really miss him? Maybe they're just in the upside down. Either way, it's got me down. So that's the lyric. Kurt, I got to know David a little bit. He was on this show just before he died. And I feel his loss kind of every day. I sing Silver Jews songs to my daughter at bedtime.
Same.
On a guitar.
Same. I did.
Yeah.
Well, I grew up on David Berman. Pavement, like, it was like the gateway drug. And then,
same here.
Then you discover Silver Jews. And his voice cuts, like the first thing I heard, sure, there was the intro, hello, my friend. Well, the first thing I heard was the Silver Jews on the Hey Drag City comp, and that was crazy enough, the famous Oz, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, anyway, when he really cuts through, when you got the CD and you listen at home and it's trouble, no trouble, on the line, you know, scotch and penicillin, please try Carlton. You know, in 27 years, I drunk 50,000 beers, like, who's got that vocal timbre?
Yeah.
Granted, recorded so well by Doug Easley, etc.
Yeah.
But his voice, the timbre, cuts right through to your soul. Yeah. And then I grew up on it, and then I met somebody circa South by Southwest 2011 who told me that David Berman listened to one of my songs over and over again. It was Society Is My Friend.
Oh, nice.
Or maybe it was actually 2013 or so, whatever. And I was like, what? He's a fan. And then this person got in touch with me. She showed me they said he played it over and over again, and but I guess eventually he heard that I was a fan of him because I would talk about him in interviews, and eventually we did correspond.
Nice.
Kind of around the same time I saw that Dylan show in Nashville, and I did finally meet up with him with my family. But a big part of that was my kids were still young, but they getting a little older. I'd sing to them before they go to bed, and they would, like, Tennessee,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
with Cassie coming, and they'd come in and sing that part that Cassie sings, and
yeah.
And like, then we went to visit, you know, David and my whole family, my wife and two daughters and Cassie, and yeah, man, when God was young, he made the wind and the sun, and since then,
it's been a slow education,
yeah. And then, like, the change, so you got that one idea again, the one about dying, like the best chorus of all time. So simple. Oh, 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 I'm lightning. Oh, oh, oh,
I'm rain.
Oh, 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 it's frightening.
I'm not the same. Yeah.
I'm not the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I hung out with him a few times, and I was planning to see, I was so proud of him with the new album. He sent me the CD. He's like, I want to know which one will you listen to? CD or LP? I was like, send me the CD because I can I can travel with it. Yeah. You know? And he sent it to me. He was like, "Which one are you gonna want to hear?" You know, that's heavy. You know, I was planning to be there in Philly when Purple Mountains came. I'm good friends. Go back way back with Woods.
We
recorded that in his backing band. So
yeah, I'm gonna actually talk to Jarvis from Woods this week about the new Woods album, Perennial, and. David also, David was interesting. There was a rumor that there was new music. He would give me updates about the record. He sent me the lyrics to I will be frank with you. I can't listen to Purple Mountains since he's...
I am the same way. Like, I would listen to all the Silver Jews, but I have not listened to Purple Mountains since then.
I can't. He sent it
because it's heavy. I mean, he's like Knights at One. I mean, clearly it's hard. It's hard. It's hard because he was hurting so bad, but I love him. Yeah. But it's dark, man.
It's very dark.
It's hard.
In 2018, he sent me, he emailed me lyrics to the songs, and then in November or December, I think Bob Nastanovich sort of went on a thing where he said there was new music coming, and I wrote to David and I said, "Hey, is there new? Is it done? Is it actually coming out?" And David said, "Yeah, here it is." Sent me a 45-minute WAV file of the entire Purple Mountains album. Not separated, just one chunk, the whole album. And I had it and just loved it. And sorry, it's a small world. I like that we both have these connections. And I just want to say it meant a lot to me to pick that out in this song, that you've got these mainstream sort of rock icons in Tom Petty and Bob Dylan, and you threw David in there. And I think, I just want to tell you, for what it's worth, you don't know me, but it's really just, it was just meaningful because I love all those dudes. But David in particular is someone that's meant a lot to me for a long time. So Kurt, for what it's worth, thank you.
Wow. thank you because it's true. And it's also, that's also like down the generation, right? Without thinking about it, I didn't think about it at the time, but it's like, you got your Dylan,
yeah,
and then that was Petty's hero, and then you got your Petty, he's cutting through, talking to people,
yeah,
straight from the radio, like he's doing the same thing, but it's catchy often, and talking to you straight through the like his influence was the radio, and then our generation, same way, in a different way, on your like combo stereo speaker compact disc that David Berman's voice is cutting through to you as a teen. So
yeah,
the way that Bob Dylan might have cut through to Tom as a teen, or you know, I gotta look at their age difference. I mean, it's not quite. Maybe it's exactly the same. I don't know.
David. As you and David. Yeah, yeah. Maybe David got 10 years on me, so he would have been 56.
What's that to Dylan and Petty? I don't know.
I think Dylan was 80. Dylan's obviously, or Dylan is 82. I think I'm guessing Tom Petty died in his early 70s. I don't know, or late 60s. Anyway, I guess what you're talking about is that weird blurry line between contemporary and mentor.
Yeah,
like hero and friend. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, but also but influence. You know, like He's a hero. Dylan was obviously a hero to Petty.
Yeah.
Must have been, you know?
Yeah.
And then he ends up being friends and works together.
Yeah.
And then similar to David, I never got, you know, went to his house and he showed me his songs and Cassie told me, oh, he hasn't showed anybody those songs yet.
Yeah.
You know, it was before he went and first recorded with Dan Bejar.
Dan Bejar.
Bejar, yeah. But they scrapped that and then,
yeah.
And then, yeah, I saw, yeah, whatever.
It's a hard thing, but he was a magical guy. Really quickly, I'll also tell you this. So like you, it's just a very similar trajectory. I was putting out feelers into the world. If I talked to Will Oldham or other mutual friends of David's, because David, for those who don't know, David kind of vanished after he retired Silver Jews and 2009, and then I started this show in 2013, and I'd talked to David once before and interviewed him over email once before as well. I think he was aware of me to some extent and remembered that I was a fan and covered him. Anyway, I started to just talk about him on this show. And I would say, you know, Will or Dan, if you ever see David, if he wants to ever talk, please let him know. And then David emailed me. He just emailed me out of the blue. And he said, this is like 2015. I'm not in any position to talk to anyone, but I tell you what, if I ever do an interview, you'll be the first person I talk to. And I was like, what? How is this possible? And then,
wow.
And then Kurt.
So it was?
He did it. So when he talked about Purple Mountains, we talked, and it's as far as I, you know, it was both for a print piece that I was working on for a magazine, and I said I wanted to use the audio for the podcast, and I sought David's approval on that, and he said it was fine to use it. And at that point, I think he talked to me, the Washington Post, the Ringer. I'm not trying to make myself sound special. I just want to explain how grateful I feel. I don't feel special. I don't think I'm special. I don't know why he did this for me, but it's just an endless gift.
But it makes you feel special, like in your chest.
I feel special, but I don't want to come across. I don't mean to suggest no. I'm some highfalutin guy. I think he was doing me a favor, frankly. And
he's the same.
Yeah,
he's the same. Yeah. He's saying the same thing. I mean, he knows. It's crazy. His writing is just so. I don't know. You just sit down, you look at it. It's so. Yeah, I don't know. He was the poet of our time.
Absolutely. That's how I feel. He moved me he was a contemporary to me. He's as important. He's as important to me as Dylan is to me, if that makes sense.
Of course.
Yeah.
And like Dylan, I don't know if he would definitely, like he would definitely be moved by it if he had the right moment and the right perspective. Like, there's no way Dylan wouldn't be moved by that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The music, the words cutting through and you know, actual air.
Yeah.
But we grew up on it.
Yeah, that's the difference.
You know? And we saw it happening.
Yep.
You know? So we know, and we're lucky.
Yeah. I 100%. I agree. We've talked about generation things here a little bit. We've talked a little bit about our kids, not yours and mine. We don't have kids together, everyone. Kurt has kids. I have kids. Now, Kurt, I feel like among the other, I mentioned earlier that I feel like you're expressing gratitude towards the people that are important to you in your life. Your kids are present on this record in a unique way. It must be Santa we've alluded to, which is the Dylan connection as well. But also you name check your daughter in Like a Wounded Bird, Trying to Fly. Can you talk a little bit about how it came to be that your kids are kind of more incorporated on this particular release?
Yeah, I think it's just because this is like a collection of capturing this era of my life.
Yeah.
And yeah, the first thing they sang on was that Must Be Santa. I mean, we've sung together, we've performed together, we've performed, you know, for various YouTube things, and I've recorded. They've been in like different classes, music classes that I recorded their stuff for. So they're experienced in the home studio. But Must Be Santa was the first thing we got them to sing back up on. And it was a job. It was for like a Christmas compilation that came out last year on Spotify. Same with the Charlie XCX thing. It was a job. Like, I was asked to cover that because she got a certain award and they knew I was a big fan.
Huh.
And I did not take it lightly. I was nervous because her generation or... I was intimidated because I just love her songwriting, and I didn't want to seem like this weird old dude. But then we're equal fan. I turned them on immediately to Charlie once I was a fan,
yeah.
And so they sang. So it's a joint effort there, and it was like the reason that's even on this record. My manager Rennie loves it, and he was when he realized that it wasn't on the main digital album. He's like, "Oh, really?" But I just say it's one too many covers. Like, you kind of forget. Like, you can go from the end of this, the nine tracks,
yeah.
You know, the Cool Water,
yeah.
Passenger Side into Cool Water and start it over again, it all makes sense. But if you end with the Charlie track, it's good, but you kind of forget where you were.
Mm.
So I left it off the digital, but we needed one more song to make a whole other LP make sense, and that made sense because it's from that era. So I put it on as a vinyl exclusive for now. I'll eventually put it out on something, maybe more pop covers or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a really catchy, It is catchy, and they, but my daughters, it makes more sense, and it sounds way better with them singing on it. So that's why that is. And yeah, we they play all kinds of instruments. I'm going to teach my oldest a wielder guitar. Yeah, okay. So in Like a Wounded Bird Trying to Fly, she wrote that lyric. One time she just said, because she's a writer and she reads all the time. We were trying to get her to do some exercise, or my wife was, to do some yoga. And she said, I feel like I'm a wounded bird trying to fly. And I ended up putting that line in the song. And she's like, make sure I get credit. Make sure I get credit. And I was like, of course, of course. But there's no liner notes anymore. I mean, she's in the liner notes like three times, but who reads liner notes? So that's why I was like, well, I got to put it in the song.
Yeah.
You know, like a wounded bird trying to fly. Well, my daughter, she wrote that line. So copyright, a will to vile. You know, that's why.
That's, it's very funny to hear that. And is that legally binding? Does that work?
I hope so. But I, you know, I also give her, I have give her credit. In the, I say song title by a will to vile. I didn't necessarily cut her into the publishing, but maybe I'll fix that someday.
I don't mean to get into family law here. I just was asking a question. I whatever you guys work out, I'm sure it'll be on the up and up. Let me just say that. My kids, I think, sometimes have an interesting perspective on pop culture, maybe even celebrity, because of the work I do and the people I talk to, and they assume I can talk to anyone. That I can, why don't you, are you going to see Bob Dylan? You're going to talk to him? I'm like, no. No, right. He doesn't like really that. Talk to people. Do your kids have like a different, do you think they have like a unique perspective on the same sort of stuff?
Similar.
Yeah.
Similar. Cause they'll meet somebody like David Berman, who we listen to, or John Prine or something. And then they've said similar things like, oh, we love PJ Harvey. They get super into PJ Harvey. And then they were like, can we meet her?
Yeah.
And we're like, well, it's not, it doesn't always work that way.
It's possible. Anything's possible. That's what I've learned. Anything's possible. But do you think it just humanizes the work you do? And I think it, like my son and my daughter this year, my son got to interview, because he's a huge, huge Beastie Boys fan, loves Beastie Boys.
Oh, wow.
And awesome. So I managed through a mutual friend to connect with Adam Horovitz, Ad Rock from Beastie Boys. So I says to Adam, I says, if we do a thing at the end, can my son ask you a few questions and we'll use the video for something? And Adam's like, sure. So my son got to interview Ad Rock from Beastie Boys. And then of course, I don't know if you have this. My kids are competitive. If one gets something, the other wants something.
Oh yeah.
It's, and I'm fine. Oh, yeah. I'm like, you're right. So,
but that's funny. So he's like, oh, well, I want to interview.
What happened was, Will Oldham and his friend Lori Damiano wrote a kid's book, based on a song by Superwolves. And so I said, my daughter and I read it and she liked it. I'm like, would you like to talk to Will and Lori? And she's like, sure. So we did. So my kids in the last, I've got them into kind of, podcast journalism, and, cool. It's kind of fun. So I just want to say I relate to, you involving your children. I hope we're doing, we can't pat ourselves on the back, but I hope we're giving them something unique in the work we do. Yeah.
Well, I think that's true, but like, I guess in a way it's like, yeah, you treat them like equals. At this point, they're 13 and 11, and we've traveled the world, you know, a lot of times, and we're like a gang, you know, like, but yeah, just like, I guess just involve them in your world would be the thing, no matter what. And, you know, we are lucky that way. Yeah.
One of the people we haven't talked about yet, I realize, Kurt, is Dallas Good of the Sadies.
Yes.
Sadies yes. are the band I've seen more than anybody in my life. Like, it must be
greatest live band in the world.
Absolutely. You appeared on their second last album and this amazing song, and you've performed with them in recent years. Can you talk a little bit about this connection with the Sadies? And within that, I don't want to make things sad and hard for both of us, but I knew Dallas Good quite well. We've known each other a long time. I attended the memorial. First time I flew back during the pandemic back to Ontario, as I went to this musical memorial for Dallas. And I saw the Sadies three times in Edmonton when they were here this year or last year. I can't remember what it was. Anyway, they just mean a lot to me And I'm sorry to keep talking about myself, but I feel like we have some mutual interests and friends and things like that. So forgive me, but can you talk a little bit about your relationship with the Sadies and how it came about?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I remember I first got in a van with them and I didn't know who they were, but I played like Woods' Fest out in Big Sur. And it was after I had my first daughter, Awilda, so like 13 years ago. And I was shy. I'm always shy at first, but I was, you know, 30 years old or something, you know. And at the end of the leg with Woods, because we shared a booking agent, they said, well, you can get a van with these guys. And I did. And it was really hard at first because I didn't know them. And I like was shy and hungover. And they were in their own world in the similar way. But by the end, just seeing them play every night, it just creeped up on me. And then it was like an after effect. Dallas's older brother, Travis. It's just heartbreaking because they literally played each other's guitar. They had a trick play each other's, the neck on each other's guitar. So like right and left hand. But Travis, I will say, I love the band and I love, and Dallas was my wingman. He's the point man. Yeah. You know, he ran the ship.
Yes, he did.
He's a singer.
Yeah.
His voice cuts in that low.
Yeah.
He writes those heartbreaking songs. But Travis has been my hero, you know, from day one. They'd always like kind of joke like, oh, tell him Travis wants to. You know, I was afraid of Travis at first. He'd be driving real slow and quiet with his sunglasses on. But he's just the most incredible guitar player of all time. You know, I hear that anytime Neil Young goes back to Canada near, you know, in the where he has like a farmhouse somewhere near where Travis lives, he hangs out with him all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I just realized over time that seeing them live so many times that they're just the realest and best live band of all time, and they got so many they're gods in Canada, but that they still play tiny pubs, you know, everywhere. But they're just like punk rock in that way, where that it's a job and they deliver all the time. They delivered, and Travis is still doing it, and thank God he's still playing. But yeah, I realized around 20. I knew anyway, we went on a couple tours together with the Violators, but I realized they were the realest band of all time when I released Bottle It In. Mm-hmm. We had them come up to this house in upstate New York, and they played, and we did a cover of Baby's Arms, what you can see on a short documentary of mine called Bottle Back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're brothers, and definitely Dallas asking me out of the blue to add lyrics to that instrumental track that became Easy Like Walking.
Yeah.
That solidified something. That solidified our history because we played a lot. Sean, the bass player I'm so close with. I love them all. Mike, we just go way back. We're a family.
That's lovely.
Just like Dallas leaving suddenly. That's a shock. You know, a lot in a row. It was Berman. Then it was John Prine. And it was Dallas all in a row. That's like 1, 2, 3. Like,
yeah.
It's like Father, Son, and Holy Spirit out.
Yeah.
Out. Gone.
Yeah. It's been hard. And I think about Dallas all the time. And I just want to thank you for those lovely words for what it's worth. It's nice to kind of commiserate. And I'm also happy the Sadies are still going. They announced that his father announced it at the memorial service that the Sadies were going to continue. And there was applause, but also gasps a little bit. Like, how can they, without Dallas, but they're doing it and it's magical. And so, and that last album, Colder Streams, is fucking fantastic. So all this to say, sorry, I don't mean to emote so much, but I,
no,
thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
No, this has been great. We're talking about a lot of, we're coming from the same place, so it's nice.
It does feel that way. The one thing that I didn't get to, and I said I would, so I want to. Well, there's a couple things I didn't even ask you about working with Kate LeBon, so that's something I want to ask about real quick. But the other thing was Another Good Year for the Roses. What an amazingly catchy song! This might be one of your catchiest ass songs, man. It's amazing, I said, it's an allusion to this George Jones. Or rather, a song that George Jones made very famous, A Good Year for the Roses. Some people might know the Elvis Costello version as well. What exactly prompted, I know you, sorry, Kurt, I get the impression from you that you don't even know why you do some of the stuff you do and why you write the way you write, but where did this, all this knot of stuff come from with that particular song?
Well, okay. Having a piano around the house is key. Like, it's kind of like a childish piano, but I'm singing it and playing it live, but it's like, it's from, because my piano skills are basic, what I kind of realize I'm good at is just getting the same, it's like the melody is in the piano. That's the hook.
Yeah.
And it's the same all the time.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes when I play guitar, I forget about hooks. You know, I think about them more now because they're good to have. Like, but sometimes with a guitar, I'm a little more free, or I'm playing a hypnotic chords or finger picking. But with a piano, it's got this melody. And it was the lyrics. Back then, I did think a lot more about what I was writing, and I was obsessed with George Jones.
Mm-hmm.
This is like 2015, 2016, maybe. My drummer, Kyle, I was obsessed with George Jones anyway, and he told me about Good Year for the Roses. And that once I heard that, it was solidified.
Yeah.
Around that time, my stage shirt was this picture I stole from a Tammy Wynette, a book called Tammy, which Jimmy McDonough, I don't know if that's how you say his name. He wrote Shaky, the Bob Dylan book, but he wrote this book about her. And there's a family photo of
Neil
George
Young.
Jones with sunglasses.
Sorry, Shaky is the Neil Young book.
Yeah, he wrote Shaky. Jimmy McDonough, he wrote Shaky.
Yeah.
But he also wrote Tammy,
mm-hmm.
which I read later. Shaky's the Bible for any 20-year-old.
you know.
But later in life, when I got a little older, I was reading Country. First I read If I Could Only Remember My Name, George Jones's book, and he makes every rock and roller look like a poser. And then, you know, I couldn't get enough, so then I read the Tammy book. But anyway, there's this photo of him, peak insanity, because he was married to Tammy then, with sunglasses, with his arm around an Easter bunny.
Yeah.
Looking maniacal. So anyway, I was obsessed with George Jones. He was my hero, you know, anti-hero. You know, the way that Jerry Lee Lewis would be your hero.
Yeah, right.
And has been, you know, like just those type of heroes. So I wrote, they said it's been a good year for the roses already. So, I was thinking about that song. But then it was years before I got, a few more years before I got behind the mic, you know, and actually record that song. And I think I recorded it because I was recording with Kate as, you know, co-producing.
Yeah.
And I had a certain amount of sketches of songs. I had the Tom Petty's Gone, which it's the first one I tried, but I was shy about the lyrics, you know, because I hadn't worked with everybody. So I was a little insecure about the lyrics. And then I had Touch Something Called a Virus with the Dead Milkmen references. That came pretty quick afterwards. But then Good Year for the Roses, I had that song written for a long time. So I think that's why I laid it down then, so I could at least have a song that was fully structured. But it was more May 2023 that we added a lot more to it. But plenty with Chris Cohen and Kate. She didn't play anything on that, but she helped produce it. She gave like percussion suggestions, but all legends playing on that recording. So you can't, it's all about the hang. You got to get the right people in the room. That's why I wanted Kate there. I had just toured with her, and I just love being around her. It makes me want to turn on the amp, you know, pick up a guitar. Oh, Kate's here. That's what it's about, you know.
So you know Kate just from happening to tour together? Is that how you kind of met?
I first knew Kate. I knew Kate from Stella Mazgawa, the drummer on that session. She's from War Paint.
Yeah,
and she's toured with me in the Sea Lice. I got her that gig, I will say.
Yeah,
but now she still plays with Courtney Barnett.
Right,
but yeah, I've played with Stella. She saved my album. She saved Waking on a Pretty Days when I needed a drummer, and we've worked together ever since. She played on Pretty Pimpin', my biggest hit.
Yeah.
I mean, it's no coincidence. It's all about having the right people to hang with, but also the great players, you know?
Well, it's all come together on that song and this beautiful EP. And Kurt, I've long wanted to talk to you, so thanks for indulging me in all this. I want to ask you about what's kind of next for you. You're a prolific guy. You mentioned Courtney Barnett. We all love that record you guys did together. Anyway, I don't want to ask a leading question, but what's coming up next for you beyond touring and whatnot?
Well, that's the beauty. Like, that's why I'm excited I turned in this album, because usually I turn in something and then hit the road with it. But this one, touring is winding down. I got one show next week, local, with Sun Ra Orchestra opening. So that's huge.
Wow. And amazing.
And the band is going to record at my home studio for a week beforehand because this is the end of all the touring. Not everybody in the Violators live in town, so they're here.
Yeah.
So you got to capitalize on that. And that's the beauty. I put out this record, and I love it. I'm proud of it. And it's a little one foot in the past and one tiny toe pointing toward the future, you know. But I got this out, and it's going to – and I got plenty of music in the can, but I'm going to work on my new album just slow and steady. I don't know how long it's going to take.
Okay.
It could be short, could be long. There's plenty of people I know I want to work with that I plan to. And I like to know that there's always gigs on the horizon eventually. And yeah, but I got some time to catch my breath, but – keep working on music, you know.
Nice. All right. Well, that sounds great. Now, if people want to learn more about you or follow you or whatever on the internet, do you have preferred places for them to go?
Well, they can follow me on Instagram. And I have a website, kurtvile.com.
Okay.
I am actually going to have a fans I'm not going to give out the title yet, but I did save another website, and I am going to have like a fan club site. Multi-dimensional fan club scenario. So, but for now, just on Instagram and whatever. I'm on and off the road all the time. That's the rules for me. So you can find me.
Okay. Yeah. You do have a bunch of tour dates coming up, I'm pretty sure. And people.
But that's in March.
That's in March. Yeah.
March.
Okay. Cool. Kurt, if we can go out on a song from Back to Moon Beach. Is there a particular song that you would suggest we go out on? And if so, can you tell us why it came to mind?
Well, okay. Dang, that's hard. Because the title track is like spiritual jazz almost and very hypnotic, and it's 8 minutes long.
Yeah.
So if you want a shorter song.
No.
We can something do... caught a... Yeah, all right, let's do that.
Okay.
let's do the title track.
You want to do the title track? Okay, and just because it's... What did you say? Multidimensional?
It's kind of spiritual jazz and multidimensional. But I don't know, though. Touch Something Called a Virus is beautiful. So you might have to call an audible there. Mm. You could choose.
Well, I like... I you know what? Let's pay a little homage to the Dead Milkmen. And I do think it's eerie that you have this song... that you wrote before a pandemic where everyone actually had the same thought for a while, probably. So, let's do it. This is Touch Something.
Let's do it.
Caught a Virus by Kurt Vile from this beautiful new, very long EP, Back to Moon Beach. Kurt, honestly, an honor to get to talk to you. I've long wanted to. I hope you enjoyed this, and I hope we talk again soon, and best of luck in the future.
Yes. It was awesome to talk to you too. And you know, I'll say real quick, I think I said it. Dallas was amazing. I don't know if I said anything about Dallas himself, but he was like the sweet soul. I probably did, but now, you know, this, but yeah, you're coming from all like real angles here. So it's cool. But, I look forward to, I'll tell the Sadies you said hi, and it's awesome to talk to you. And I will look up your interview with David Berman. It's on this podcast.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I can send you some links, but I appreciate it. Thank you, Kurt.
Yep, thank you. I'll see you around.
about a week, and man, I got a migraine. The glorious pain.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Yeah, it's very cool and fun when you make a show and then 10 years later, Kurt Vile is on it. That's kind of fun, isn't it? I hope you enjoyed that chat with Kurt. I really did. Nice to meet him in this regard for the very first time. Have a chat. I think we had a lot in common. I hope you enjoyed that, and we'll check out his new EP. And thanks for listening to this, the 821st episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode that you've heard about and you're looking for it everywhere and you can't find it, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, which I'm very delinquent on, please visit vishkhanna.com and also like Creative Control on Facebook or follow the show on Twitter at vishcreative, or you can follow me directly on Twitter and Instagram at vishkhanna. I'm also on Blue Sky and Threads and TikTok, and there's a YouTube channel. I think I've talked about that sometimes. There's a few things. If you just look me up and follow me or whatever, or subscribe to things, that's fine. You can do whatever you want. You don't have to do that either. You can just mind your business and forget I said anything. Please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to support my work. $6 American or more a month grants you access to some exclusive content that I put up from time to time. I also put up the episodes earlier on the Patreon, and so you can get to episodes earlier than everybody else. And I still have some Creative Control t-shirts that I try to provide to people who do pony up for that $6 or more a month monthly donation. So if you're interested in one of those, message me on Patreon. Look, I'm lamenting this. I really just wish I could do this show all the time, just like any musician wishes they could play music all the time, or any artist wishes they could just make their art all the time. I feel like it's close. I feel like it's not close monetarily if you look at the Patreon, but love to get it up higher. So if you have the means and want to support me and my work get me to stop thinking about it, that would be great. Patreon.com/creativecontrol. We all have our problems, don't get me wrong. It's bugging me lately. I want to thank the excellent Alberta record retailer Blackbird Music, who support this show. You can learn more about them at blackbird.ca. Other independent businesses support this show in an in-kind manner. Those include Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. I want to thank my good pal Jim Guthrie for supporting me in this show. You can learn more about Jim and his music at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you so much for listening to this episode with Kurt Vile. It was a really meaningful one for me. I hope it inspires you to check out Kurt's new album. Maybe subscribe to this podcast or follow it and tell your friends all about it. And maybe they'll do the same. I'm going to go now. I will talk to you very soon. Thanks again for your love and support. I'll talk to you later. Bye for now.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.